What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from pitchless.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today, we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays. And I like and hate this rotation. Obviously, I'm a McClanna fan. However, I don't think I'm going to be drafting Shane McClanahan in any league this year. So let me go into this. Last year, obviously, was a breakout year. 12-8 record, 166 innings on the docket, 2.54 ERA, 0.93 whip, 30% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate. It was everything that we wanted, right? The four-seamer was such a liability before, and clearly it got fixed up. This changeup was introduced. It was, well, not introduced, but tripled in usage from about 8 to 24%. It was all there. And I'm going to tell you why I'm going to likely avoid Shane McClanahan next year. Right-handers, McClanahan dominated. The changeup was used about 29% of the time against them, 24% swing strike rate. It was filthy. So were the two breaking balls, back foot sliders at 91, and then this huge hook that would go down. It was just stupid. Then you have the four-seamer going up to a 14% swing strike rate. Just all ridiculous. Batters were debilitated and demoralized facing Shane McClanahan. But left-handers, well, 46% hard contact allowed on that four-seamer against the lefties. In short, I think McClanahan's 2022 season was because the changeup nullified right-handers, but he still doesn't have a solution against lefties. You might have seen the tweet I put out as I did this breakdown on the 12th of January, I should say, saying that Shane McClanahan needs a sinker. Because his four-seamer is just bad against lefties. He doesn't use the changeup, so he has to rely then on the curveball and the slider. They're both good against lefties. The slider does good stuff down and away, but I want to see something more from this. This is clearly a problem. He doesn't even locate arm side often with that four-seamer against lefties. McClanahan just kind of throws the four-seamer in the middle of the zone, and it's not this refined approach against them. Maybe he does get a better approach with the four-seamer and it's okay. I just wanted to throw a sinker that goes inside to lefties. I think that's all he needs to do. Some guys can't do it. Some guys get a sinker grip and they just are not able to locate and it just gets wild and everything fine. But I think that is actually the solution here for Shane McClanahan to be better. He's saying, Nick, what are you talking about? 2.54 ERA, 0.93 whip, 30% K rate. He doesn't need to be better. Well, for that to be sustainable, this is a clear problem for McClanahan, and I want that to be fixed. Now, there's also the question about his health. McClanahan last year was doing all these wonderful things, and August comes around, and he has a shoulder impingement. And then he comes back from it after a two-week stint in the IL and has a neck spasm. And I think what happened in September for McClanahan was the Rays were like, hey, all right, take it easy. We don't want you to be rushing back from this. If there's a problem, we don't want you to really overwork yourself. So he wasn't as good in September, but playoff time showed up. 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, and he was himself. I'm not really worried about the health of Shane McClanahan as others are because it was an impingement, not a tear for the shoulder. And McClanahan's neck spasm, to me, honestly, was a reaction to the shoulder impingement, right? That doesn't seem like it's something that's just going to appear, and that is the story moving forward. So, yeah, I think they're just going to let him go every 5 days. And I remember this time last year, we were talking about McClanahan only going 5 innings for the Rays. Well, they rectified that. They let him go 6 constantly in 2022. So McClanahan for 2023, I am interested, but I am worried about the left-handed stuff, and maybe the Rays are still a little worried about pushing him too hard. Maybe the health is still in question. And it's just too much stuff that I'm going to have McClanahan outside of my top five for 2023. I have, I think, two guys that I'm just targeting in Carlos Rodon and Luis Castillo that I would just rather get them at their price points than McClanahan. Luis Castillo is a couple rounds later, and I think that's just like the biggest steal of your drafts. But this isn't this isn't the Seattle Mariners. Go listen to that yesterday. this is, or 2 days ago, this is Shane McClanahan. Let's continue now with Tyler Glasnow. And I'm not drafting Tyler Glasnow either. 6.2 innings yesterday. Last year, 135 ERA, but it doesn't really matter what the stats were. You saw Shane McClanahan. Tyler Glasnow returned from Tommy John, and he looked fine. He looked like his normal self. But the normal self is command is weird, right? And if you really scrutinize what made Tyler Glasnow so good, well, remember, 2020 had a 4-plus ERA, and then he threw about, what, 88 innings in 2021 before Tommy John hit. That is, the sticky stuff was removed. He tried to do too much of the ball. He talks about gripping it too hard, and that messed up his elbow, and thus he had Tommy John, and he kind of was just upset at the whole league for giving him Tommy John. What I'm going to say is a couple things. One, he had a successful year, but how much is the sticky stuff going to affect that? Two, his four-seamer gets hit too hard. And this is a big issue for him, is that he has a 70% strike rate with his fastballs. He just kind of shoves it in the zone. 30% hard contact rate. It's not an elite four-seamer. We like to think it is because it comes in really hard, but it isn't. Now, his breaking stuff is elite at missing bats and chase rates and all that kind of stuff. But it's still around 60% strike rate when it does work. And I think it opens the door for too much volatility for Tyler Glasnow overall. This was 2021 I'm talking about. And even as he was doing it, it felt as if some days it was amazing, it was great, and he had it, the slider introduction, having that 60% strike rate slider, and then also the curveball becoming more of a thing as well. These are good things. But I still don't feel like Tyler Glasnow is a finished product. And because of that, we're looking at this year ahead and we're seeing, okay, I think the command is still kind of weird and the fastball is not as elite as I want it to be. And he still doesn't get enough strikes on the secondary pitches, at least when we last saw him in full. How much is the sticky stuff going to affect him? He pitched 6.2 innings last year. How many innings can we actually trust Tyler Glasnow to go when he's never thrown 115 major league innings in a season? Never. He was having injury problems before Tommy John. And then you have him being on the Rays. That is clearly not going to say, yeah, go 6-7 innings. Go all the time. So I'm not saying that Tyler Glasnow isn't going to be productive for your teams. I think per inning, you're going to be happy with Tyler Glasnow. But do you want to spend a top 100 pick on a guy that we don't know how much volume he's going to get and how good he's going to be as still in question? Strikeouts will be there. You will have a strikeout rate above 25%, y'all. But how bad is the ERA going to be? Is his whip going to be 105 or is it going to be more like 110, 115 as the walk rate probably goes closer to 8-9% again? I don't know. It's probably not going to be 115. I think the hip or nigh is still going to be good because of the breakers. But Tyler Glasnow is not really the guy that I want to go for here. And I think it's too much of a risk when you have so many good studs to go for instead. He's not the one with how 12-team drafts are going. I kind of skip over Tyler Glasnow and a couple of the guys around him. But there are three others here that are very intriguing. Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen, Zach Eflin. I'm going to talk about all of those after this break. I don't know what order to put these in. I'm just going to do Jeffrey Springs first. 2.46 ERA, 107 whip, 26% K rate, 5.6% walk rate. Yes, that's a 21% K minus walk rate, essentially, which is insane across 135 innings last year for Springs. Came out of nowhere. He finally got the starting job in May and ran with it, never hit his wall. And I got to wonder, is this going to stick? I think none of us truly expect a 2.46 ERA. That would be foolish. I don't think the K rate is going to stick at 26%. The changeup is so good against right-handers. It looks beautiful. It is beautiful. And this is kind of like McClanahan, where Springs' four-seamer is so bad against lefties, and he doesn't throw the changeup against them. But McClanahan has a really good slider and a curveball, while Springs doesn't. The slider's fine, but it's not an elite pitch. It's not something we go, oh, wow, look at that slider. It isn't. It's really the changeup, and then against lefties, well, Springs gets crushed, 46% hard contact yet again on that four-seamer against lefties for Springs' fastball. And then the slider is okay, and that's about it. So I'm a touch worried about Jeffrey Springs for next year. I still want to have him on my roster. I think overall you'll be happy with this, but I don't think it's going to be a strikeout rate above 25%. I don't think the whip is going to be under 110. I don't think the ERA is going to be under 3. I mean, I don't think it's going to be under 3.3 or 3.4, honestly. I think there's going to be a lot of regression here for Jeffrey Springs. How much can he really squeeze out of that changeup? Can he develop a sinker or figure out how to use his four-seamer a bit better? And is his slider going to improve? I mean, there are a lot of question marks here for Jeffrey Springs. I do like the fact, and I should mention this at the beginning, the Rays are getting the Tigers and the Nationals the first two games of the year. Sorry, series. And when I talk about my draft strategy, when I have my four that I'm locked in on, after that, I do want to ensure that the guys I do pick up, I am starting in their first game of the year. I would be doing that with Jeffrey Springs. I'd be doing that with Zach Eflin. I'd be doing that with Drew Rasmussen. So all three of those are actually guys I would consider in my drafts. Now the question becomes, do I go for Jeffrey Springs or who else is around? I think Springs is going a little too high for me, where I'd rather go for, say, John Gray. I'd rather go for Pablo Lopez or Joe Ryan or Jesus Luzardo or so on and so forth. So I'm probably not going to have Jeffrey Springs in my teams, but Zach Eflin and Drew Rasmussen are a little bit more appealing, as I think they're all kind of similar. They do different things here, but they kind of are trying to be a Toby. I don't really think that the 26% K rate is going to stick for Jeffrey Springs. I'm just letting you know that, because I really think it's just too much reliant on that changeup against right-handers to get those strikeouts. And so against lefties, I'm not going to get them. And then is he going to have the same ability with the changeup? I don't know. But I do like Jeffrey Springs' pitch separation for what's worth. He does sliders down in glove side, changeups down in arm side, and four-seamers up consistently. So he does do that, at least. But still, I'm a little bit weirded out. I'm going to go to Drew Rasmussen next because I think he's actually someone I could find myself rostering a lot, which is surprising because I've been kind of out on Drew Rasmussen over the years. 11-7 record last year, 146 innings, 2.84 ERA, 104 whip, 21% K rate, 5% walk rate. Against lefties, Drew Rasmussen is actually amazing. Really good. What is it with Rays pitchers that are bad against their same-handedness? I don't know. They don't throw sinkers, that's why, at all. They don't know how to do it. That's how you do it. You nullify with a sinker inside, arm side. That's it. Anyway, Drew Rasmussen's cutter and four-seamer. I'm not going to sit here and tell you exactly how they do it, but they are absurdly talented at missing barrels off of lefties. It's just how it is. 2.2% barrel rate on the cutter last year. He throws 33% of the time against lefties. Like, they just can't do it. Four-seamer is half of the league average as well. I think that's going to stick around. It's kind of always been Rasmussen's thing. I've put my hands up and go, all right, I need to accept this as truth now. Rasmussen is really good at debilitating lefties with this. Now, against righties, I think Drew Rasmussen still has work to be done here. There are days, there are such good days when Rasmussen's able to put his slider down and glove side against righties, and he's able to have that 10 strikeout game against the Yankees, but then he just can't do it. The next three games don't even tally 10 strikeouts combined. That's a problem. So I like Rasmussen. I think he's worthwhile for your teams. He kind of is a Toby, honestly, and that's all right. I'm fine with that, especially again with the Tigers and Nationals first. I imagine it might be the Nationals that Rasmussen would get. I'm cool picking him up and starting him for that. Keep in mind that is after the opening weekend, so you may want to drop Rasmussen for something else, but I don't think this is a breakout year for Rasmussen. I don't think that all of a sudden he's going to jump up to a 25% K rate. There's nothing, I mean, unless he really gets that slider down in a way with consistency, and really starts getting whiffs on that, then maybe something can work out there. But I don't think the four-seamer is elite enough. I don't think the cutter is elite enough against right-handers, and that's an issue. Then there's Zach Eflin. Zach Eflin last year, 4.04 ERA across 75 innings, 1.12 whip, 21% K rate, 5% walk rate. I'm really impressed with Eflin's command overall. Against lefties, generally that's when sinkers do not perform well. It's just how it is, right? You jam same-handedness, and then you struggle against opposite-handedness. But Eflin did it right. You're supposed to put sinkers down and away, or front hip and surprise for a called strike. And I mean down and away as in like starting on the edge and then maybe going a little bit off to get the end of the bat. That's what Eflin did. He avoided it in the middle of the plate a ton with it. He had curveballs that were so good. 20% usage finally. We actually really leaned into it a good amount. 3.7% hard contact rate against lefties. It was really, really nice what we saw with that. Right-handers were good too. Didn't really jam as much as you want for a sinker against right-handers, and as Eflin went kind of down and in as opposed to down and middle, middle and in, or up and in. And then he went back door down and away, which is fine. That's okay. I'm all right with that. But I think there is a little bit room of improvement if he does try to jam them. As far as the curveball goes, 47% actually, I should say, O-swing on it. That's good. The other stuff, the cutter and the slider, I think is just generally good locations. It all works. 4.04 ERA essentially tells you, look, like he's going to try and do his best, but there are days that it's just not going to be there and Eflin's going to get hit around. The sinker's going to find the middle of the plate and it's just going to get hit more, and that's that. So I see Eflin possibly as this year's Toby for the Rays. They're going to let him start, I think. They're not just going to say, oh, five innings, here's the place of pitch maximization. I think with Eflin, they're going to say, look, we need volume. That's why we got you. Go and do as much as you possibly can. And good luck. You'll get a decent amount of wins for being on the Rays as well. I think it's solid, especially with that early those early matchups. You'll likely enjoy it. So, yeah, I'm all for Eflin at the end of your drafts, but honestly, he's not really the kind of guy that you want to go and get to rely on through the year. He could be the Toby of the year, but I think you just get him to fill out your opening weekend, and that's it. And take it from there, right? Don't really expect Eflin to be anything close to a 25% strikeout rate. Don't expect Eflin to be a 3 ERA. He's going to be fine. He's going to be a Toby. And we're okay with that when you have a really good matchup the first start of the year. As far as the other guys go for the Rays, there's really four pitchers. And I don't really care about any of them. There's Luis Patino and Yanni Chirinos, who both very minimally pitched last year. And I'm waiting for their opportunity to come in. But even if they get the opportunity, I'm not going to go after Patino and Chirinos. It's a wait and see for both of them. Josh Fleming had his moment last year. With K per walk. Sorry, he had a 13 K per nine or so in his first two starts. That was because of sinker whiffs, and sinker whiffs are not something that was sustainable for Fleming. Even if he gets this opportunity, it's not like a Jeffrey Springs thing is going to soar or whatever. Same with Patino and Chirinos. I don't anticipate it. Very much a wait and see for these, for Patino and Chirinos. And then there's Taj Bradley, who did well in the minors, double A and triple A last year. Double A was really good, 31% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate. While in AAA, did a little bit worse, lower that strikeout rate to about 21%, 2% drop or 2-point drop on the swing strike rate, maintain the walk rate. That's a wait and see, right? He's very young. Maybe the Rays get in a situation where they have a lot of injuries and they say, you know what, we got to go with Taj Bradley and give him a shot. But that's a spec ad when the call happens, which might be a long time. But that's it. That's the Rays. Thanks so much for listening to these podcasts. Make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. Do the whole Pitchers Fantasy Baseball podcast if you can. It goes a long way for us. I'd love to hear what you think of the podcast, how we can be better. But that's it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.